This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, exploring the history of the Navajo Code Talkers today. There are a lot of resources out there, great books, documentaries, even a feature film with Nicolas Cage, but there's no substitute from hearing from one of the Code Talkers himself, and that's what we're getting from Bill Toledo. When we left off, he had been taken to Guadalcanal, where he and his fellow Code Talkers would receive additional training, and his initial taste of combat would be pretty close at hand.
They had this coconut grove away from the Henderson Field, where we had set up the camp. These Japanese had the air bases not too far from Guadalcanal. We started getting the air raid, you know, at night, strafing the airfield, Henderson Field. So we had our jungle training there all through the summer.
What was it like when you got to Bougainville? With all that training, did it really prepare you for what combat was really like, or was that another awakening for you?
Bougainville. When we landed, I was supposed to send a message, what's going on the beach, to the headquarters on the ship, to another code talker. I don't know why the general didn't let me do that, what's going on the beach, you know. So after that, we moved into the jungle. It rained a lot on Bougainville. When you dig a foxhole about that deep, you know, the water will come go into the foxhole. Makes you feel like you're laying in the bathtub. No, get all wet, you know. And we have password at night. Every night we have password. Mostly some famous boxer, famous baseball player or basketball player. So every evening we have a new password. So the Japanese, they move around at night, you know, and anybody comes to your foxhole, you have to challenge them. Who goes there, you know? If he doesn't answer with the password, and you can get rid of them, you know. As we were moving into the jungle, ahead of, behind the frontline troop, there was a Marine, I guess one of the frontline troop, was walking behind us. And he was supposed to be with the other group in front. And I guess he mistaked me for the Japanese. He poked me with a rifle in the back and told me to raise my hand and turn me in to the commander. Told the commander that I found this Japanese walking with you guys. What shall I do with him? Shall I go ahead and shoot him, you know? And then the commander said, what are you doing back here? He said, you're supposed to be out in front with his frontline troop. Get your butt back in there, you know, and let him go. He's one of our men, you know. So he let me go. And without me knowing, I was assigned this one Marine. He was a takes care of the coat. We share foxhole together. He was assigned to me as my bodyguard without me knowing it, you know. So.
And that tells you the work you were doing with that code must have been pretty important for them to give you a bodyguard, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we memorized the code, and it's all in our head, you know. So that's why.
So what was that bodyguard going to do if you guys were captured together?
I found out later on from another code talker that they had orders. Somebody told him that when we get captured like that, the bodyguard will shoot you, you know, get rid of you because you memorized the code, you know, to protect the code and himself, too. That's what this one code talker told me. So if I knew about it, I don't know how I would have felt.
And this is decades after the war that you find this out. So how did you feel about it when you found out?
This happened something like 43 years after the war. Well, I went to see him, my bodyguard, you know, in California. One day we have this after the war, we used to get together, all the communication sectors I used to serve with. We go to different city and have a reunion, you know. This one was in San Francisco. When he asked me, he said, "Did you know that I was a bodyguard?" I said, "No, I didn't know that." So that's when I found out. Long time after the war.
Did that make you a little emotional or rock your world a little bit to find out that he had those orders?
Yeah, after that. But he didn't tell me that he would shoot me. You know, this came from another code talker. That's when he told me. And then later on, I found out that he was supposed to shoot me, kill me. And then that's when I started thinking about it. So I wonder how I would have felt, you know.
Are you glad you didn't know at the time?
Yeah, I was glad I didn't know at the time.
I don't blame you. And that, by the way, is one of the central plot points to the Wind Talkers movie. The Nicolas Cage character is tasked with protecting the code at all costs. Bill's bodyguard was too, but unlike the code talkers in the movie, Bill was not aware of this arrangement. And as you heard, he's thankful for that. But Bill, I know there were some other situations you encountered in which that danger was pretty evident. Another close call you had was on Guam, where you're running a message, and this wasn't something you usually did, carry a message, but they ask you to be a messenger. And tell me about what you had to do and what happened.
Oh, that one, what happened was... We're about halfway up the mountain when we were spending the night up there. And that night we were attacked. Must have been about middle of the night we were attacked by the Japanese Banzai attack, they call it. Because when they attack like that, you know, they holler like, Banzai, Banzai, you know. There was only somewhere around about 20 of them. It sounded like they were over 100 hollering, Banzai, you know. So when the frontline troops opened up on them, they got rid of them. They destroyed our radio and they were throwing hand grenades, you know, all that. They destroyed our radio and telephone. So I was supposed to be used as a runner. The next morning, one of the sergeant came over. He gave me a note. He said, "Take this note down to the beach where the regimental headquarters, so we can have another radio and telephone, you know." So he was a sergeant, I was only a PSC, so on the double, he told me, so I took off. I was supposed to let the my bodyguard know about it, you know. So I just went and took off, delivered the message. So we got another radio and telephone.
But you came to a muddy area that you had to cross, and all of a sudden bullets started flying?
Oh, yeah. And I came to a truck where they were loading some dead Marines, you know. They were taking them off the hill on the stretchers with the rope on, you know, bringing them down to the where the truck is. And then they put them in the truck, and like a pile of log in there, you know. And some of those Marines that were killed. When I got into the clear there, I heard bullets going by, you know, and I started running. Before I started to move, you know, there was a bunch of Marines on the other side against the hill, and they were hollering at me, you know, and they were saying something, but I couldn't understand what they were hollering about. So I just went on and took off, just walking, you know, and then pretty soon I heard a bullet going by. I started running, you know, zigzagging like that, and I fall in the muddy road and get up. And here there was a sniper up in the canyon, way up on top. I guess he saw me going down there. He was shooting at me, and there was a Marine up at the top. This sniper was right below him. He came out of his hiding place and started shooting at me, and then this Marine saw him there, he shot him. And then he fell down into the canyon, you know, way down there. And then I started walking. I mean, I just kept running over there and zigzagging all the way. And then when I got over there, close to these guys, one of the Marines came over, run over to me, and said, "Hey, Chief, where did you play football, you know?" And then he was telling me about the sniper. And that's why they were all bunched up over there. Because he's been picking off these Marines that were going by. So I delivered the message, and we got our radio and telephone.
He brought up football because he was impressed with your moves, dodging all those bullets, huh?
Yeah.
But they came pretty close, too. One of them got a piece of your clothing?
Yeah. Well, one of them, my jacket out here, she put a little hole there.
Mm-hmm. If that Marine hadn't shot that Japanese sniper, do you think you would have made it through there?
You mean me? I guess while I was still out there, down there, that's when he shot him, you know, killed him.
So if he hadn't shot him, that sniper would have had a few more shots at you.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I don't know, I was a target, you know.
When it comes to your role as a code talker. And there were more than 400 of you, and now there are fewer than 50 left alive. So you're one of the only ones that can tell this story and keep this history alive. What is important to you for us to know? What do you want us to remember?
There's some others, the code talkers are doing that too, yeah. Telling stories and all.
So why is that important? Why do you do it?
Well, that's what these people that make requests, they want to hear stories about how we use the language on the battlefield. Because they had heard it helped win the war. That's the main reason that they want how we use the code on the battlefield.
Yeah, and I can tell it's important to you to keep that history alive and let people know about the men like you, especially those 13 who died during World War II. And, of course, the man who envisioned it all, Philip Johnston. I want to make sure to say thank you, Bill. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us about the unique way that you served our country. And another thing I like to ask veterans who have a whole lot of decades to reflect back upon is, what are you most proud of and what are you most thankful for?
Well, I was very lucky to help put the story across, you know, to people. So they know what we did with our language, you know, and that's the reason I'm kind of glad that I did this. I did it, you know.
You survived those close calls you've talked to us about. You also were there the first day of the Battle of Iwo Jima. Your cousin was there, too. You guys actually met up there on Iwo. There's a lot of things that you lived through. Did you ever feel like somebody was looking out for you or that you were fortunate to survive in as good a shape as you did?
You know, after the war, I came back. I was at home, you know. I had this dream about the war, you know, that sometimes, what did they call that?
Flashback?
Yeah, flashback, yeah, that's what I get. And I suffered that for a long time, until finally it got so bad that I had to get treatment from the my people, my medicine man, you know, to treat me for that flashback, you know, and then you went away, and I was cured.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you shared that with us, because I know you're not alone in having those haunting dreams and flashbacks. So many of the veterans I've interviewed over the years have experienced that also, and I don't want the rest of us to be ignorant to that burden that you carried and some still carry today. I've heard a lot of things on Hometown Heroes over the years, but I have never heard anyone sing the Marine Corps hymn in Navajo. I understand that's your specialty, Bill. Would you do that for us? I know you're proud to claim the title of United States Marine. There you have it, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, but from the native tongue of a Navajo code talker, Bill Toledo of Laguna, New Mexico. I know I sure learned a lot. Hope you did too, and I hope you'll join us again next time. All those links that I've referenced today are available at hometownheroesradio.com. You'll find some photos on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. I can't say it in Navajo, but I'll give it to you in plain English one more time. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you that freedom is not free.